Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Savings, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 55. I'm recording it on Friday, December 5th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is The Internet Changes Everything. If you've listened to earlier podcasts, you know that I often make reference to things I've learned participating on internet discussion boards. And that's really my, my niche or my mode of operation. I am a journalist. I've made my living as a journalist for many years. And I started posting on the internet, on internet discussion boards. My first post was in May of 1999 at the Motley Fool Retire Early Board, but I began posting. I only put up a few posts at that time, and then I began posting on an almost daily basis in December of 1999 and have been a regular poster ever since at various different discussion boards. As a journalist, I think I may be a little more attuned to this question than some others, but the internet discussion board, and of course it appears in various forms. Blogs are, you know, can sometimes serve the same purpose. They're not exactly the same thing. And I'm sure that the discussion board, there have been changes to discussion boards over the years, and there will be more changes as technology permits new things. But the internet discussion board is basically a place where, you know, people from all places, all geographic places and all walks of life and all income levels and all sorts of interest can meet together electronically and share ideas and bounce ideas off of each other. The internet discussion board is a communications medium of tremendous power. And I don't know, I feel that I tapped into this very early. Somehow I just happened to notice this. I think there were just things going on in my life that helped me to see it. And in a way, it's helped me tremendously. In other ways, it has hurt me tremendously. I sometimes think that the medium is not yet sufficiently developed, and I am sometimes trying to do things with the medium that it's not quite ready for. But the potential is there. I'm highly confident. But many people are derogatory. They make derogatory comments about discussion boards. And the type, you know, the people who own them do this. It drives me a little bit batty. There's a phrase at the Morningstar.com board. I used to participate at the Vanguard Diehards board at Morningstar.com. And the Morningstar rules for participation are very good. They're very well worded. They're not enforced effectively at all, but the rules themselves are good and make sense. But they have one statement that I'm sure it was put there by lawyers, but it really does drive me a little nuts. They, you know, they're talking about discussion boards on money issues, you know, investing primarily, and I think the first statement they make is they say this discussion board is for entertainment purposes only. And that just drives me nuts because people are going to that discussion board to learn how to plan their retirements. They're going to learn, you know, how to plan their financial futures. There are big name experts that participate at that board. John Bogle, Larry Swedrow, Bill Bernstein, Rick Ferry, John Walter Russell used to participate there. So big name people. And they're telling people this is all entertainment. You know, John Bogle's going to do card tricks for you. And, you know, Bill Bernstein is going to tell riddles. And, you know, Larry Suidro is going to do a little song and dance, and I find it insulting. People aren't there for entertainment. Obviously, there is entertainment. People tell jokes. People tell stories. You know, people become friends. So there is an entertainment element to it. But the primary reason why people are there is to learn about money issues. And it's important that that be understood, you know, and reflected in the rules of the site. Because if people are there to learn about money issues, there's a certain seriousness that has to come into play. That the discussions have to be administered in a serious way. And I'm sure that that language is in there. Some lawyer put it in there because I presume the concern is that obviously on discussion boards, people get things wrong. That happens all the time. You know, because the barriers to entry are so low, people will put up, you know, sometimes by mistake, people will put up things that are wrong because they just don't know. They're not professionals. And sometimes deliberately, of course, people engage in deception on boards. People play games. And so I presume that what's going on is the people that own the site, they don't want to be held financially responsible. So I certainly understand them wanting to disclaim responsibility. That's 100% appropriate. But I just don't like that language that it's here for entertainment purposes. That, to me, is an overstatement of what they're trying to get across. The message they should be trying to get across is we cannot vouch for the information here. You know, we don't have procedures in place so that we can assure that the claims made are accurate, as we could say, you know, if we published an article, we could have editors look at it, but we don't edit posts to a discussion board. So that point is entirely well taken and entirely appropriate. But to say it's for entertainment purposes goes too far. They're trying to totally distance themselves from the information to suggest that the information has no merit for purposes of financial planning. And I think that's false. There's great value in the information provided at Vanguard, at all the boards I've participated at. I've participated actively at Vanguard Diehards for a long time, 2 years. I've participated actively at the Motley Fool Retire Early Board for, more than 2 years, from 1999 through May of 2003. I posted there daily. The Early Retirement Forum, I posted actively for about 2 years. The FIRE Board at nofeeboards.com, I posted there for 2 or 3 years. Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group at that same site, I posted regularly. I was the founder of that board. I posted a few months actively at the Financial Webring Forum. Those are the ones. I'm not sure if there are any others I can't think of. But bogleheads.org, I've never posted at. I was banned before I ever put up my first post, just on reputation. And I read that board. I don't read it as carefully as I used to when I participated at Vanguard Diehards. That board sprung out of the Vanguard Diehards board, and I used to read Vanguard Diehards every day. I don't read Bogleheads every day, and I certainly don't look at every thread. I perhaps look at one thread a day, something like that. But I do try to skim it. There's some wonderful, wonderful stuff there. You know, the biggest problem with discussion boards is that they are too time-consuming. You know, that's the one cost really associated with discussion boards, is they can be incredibly time-consuming. And I believe the future of boards is a pay-for model. I believe that boards will have to change so that the owners charge admission for participation. And my hope is that the other side of that story will be when owners begin charging for admission. Some already do. But when they charge for admission, they will take on more responsibilities for effective administration of what goes on at boards. You know, that's appropriate. If they're going to charge, they should take on responsibilities. And that may help also with the time problem, that if boards are, first of all, if they're administered properly, that may help with the time problem because there'll be less nonsense going on. But secondly, they may owners that are charging for admission may be willing to pay for technology to come up with more effective ways of sorting out threads so that people can quickly find only the material that is really valuable to them. And of course, charging would limit the number of people who participate. So there might be boards. I believe that in the future, there will be boards that will form that will only be the best people, you know, the best informed, most active posters, you know, and best organized thinkers. And those boards will sort of be super boards, super discussion boards that perhaps other boards will look to come up with ideas for discussions. But these super boards will be the ones that you will really want to spend your time on, because you'll be able to get really great information in a short amount of time, because there won't be as many participants. On the other hand, you might want to participate at a non-super board because they're easier, they're less intimidating to participate at. So there would be places for all sorts of boards down the road. But the point here is that the one big downside of boards is that they are time consuming. But I have spent an awful lot of time on discussion boards, and it could be questioned whether that's a productive use of my time. There certainly are people who would question it. I remember there was a guy, I probably won't be able to recall his name now, and that's a shame. There's a guy who has an extremely successful blog in the personal growth area, and I just am sorry, I'm blanking out on his name at the moment, but extremely successful. And he once wrote an article, a long article, the type of article I write, 8,000 words or something like that. And he gave all the things that he did that he felt made him successful. And he was very much an independent thinker, and that's why I wish I could think of his name. I'm embarrassed that I can't at the moment. But if you look up, I think if you look up personal growth, or personal growth strategies or something like that, his blog/website will probably be the first one that comes up. It's a huge, huge audience. And but he wrote this long article and about how he goes about doing what he does. And the whole article was wonderful. It was creative thinking. I just loved it. But one of the things he said that hit me hard is he basically publishes in a blog format. I really think of it as a website, because he does these long articles. They're more like articles than they are like blog entries, but he does them in sort of a blog format. But he breaks all the rules of blogs. He didn't publish, some blogs are 3 or 4 times a day, and he would go weeks without publishing an entry, and then he would put out, some 8,000 word piece on some topic. But one of the things he said was he made a decision at one, I think originally he used to accept comments, and then more and more comments were coming in, and he made a decision just to not permit comments at his blog, which is very unusual. Most people encourage comments. They want to get comments. And he basically said no. And I admired him because he took an independent stand. He thought it through, and he said, this is the best thing for me. And his decision was, I think he didn't want to take energy away from developing the articles. He felt that the key to his success was his independent take on things and developing these in-depth articles that gave answers not available elsewhere, and that participating in comments would just dilute the energy of the site. And I thought it was great that he did that, and it certainly worked in his case. But it's so counter to how I think, because I spend enormous amounts of energy answering questions. If people send in, if they participate at the blog, or they send in emails, or I go to other sites, and if people there are holding discussions on my topic, I just love to get into the mix, love to get into discussions with other community members, and I soak up enormous amounts of time that I could be devoting to other things where I very much need to be devoting my time. So it's a questionable strategy that I follow. But I just feel on a deep level that I learn so much from interaction with other community members. And so that's really what, you know, the topic of this podcast is that I don't think people have realized today how powerful a communications medium the internet discussion board is. And any vehicle on the internet, you know, it doesn't have to be a discussion board. It could be a blog. It could be all sorts of things. But anything on the internet that permits us to interact with others, it's a tremendous way to learn. And it is particularly a tremendous way to learn about investing. I mentioned in the last podcast I did, number 54, was, does Robert Shiller pull his punches? And I quoted something Shiller said in a recent article that was posted at the Atlantic Magazine website. And Shiller said in there, and it's just these basic truths that we have to learn about investing. And I would rather drill on a basic truth 10 times than give 10 reiterations of conventional wisdom. I just think you need to get the basics right. And what Shiller said is so important. He was talking about, you know, the whole thing. You know from listening to my other podcast, I advocate something called rational investing. It's a new model of investing. It's a rejection of the dominant model of today, passive investing. Passive investing says you don't need to change your allocation in response to price changes. Rational investing says you must change your allocation in response to price increases. They're opposite models. And there are all sorts of implications that follow from those basic premises. I think the hardest thing, rational investing is very simple to explain. And it's very common sense. There's no reason why anyone should have any trouble with it. But I know for a fact that lots of people do have trouble with it. And the reason is, I just think that the most important question I need to address in persuading people to abandon the passive investing model and adopt the rational investing model is, how did it ever come to be that passive investing became so popular, both with investors and with investing experts? That's the question people have in their heads. And I can explain logically why rational investing works and passive investing doesn't, and I can do that from now till doomsday, and it doesn't click with a lot of people because we all learn only what we're ready to learn. You know, there's a saying. What's the saying? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Something like that. And another saying you'll hear is, you know, people will say, especially they say this on discussion boards, but they say it everywhere. They say it in response to articles or books. People say no one ever persuades anyone of anything. In other words, people have their viewpoints. They say this about political campaigns. When people put out these, you know, commercials and stuff, some people will say, well, it doesn't really affect anybody because the commercials are viewed positively by the people who already agreed with whatever's being said in the commercial, and the commercial's viewed negatively by those who don't agree. And I think there's some truth to that, but it's like so many things in life. There's some truth, and then there's some weakness in the point. And the important thing is to be able to separate the two. People don't often change their minds. You know, people don't read an article at my site and change their mind about what they think about saving or investing as a result. But there are people who are on the edge of changing their mind, who have doubts about what they currently believe. Those people can indeed be tipped over by an effective argument. So, you know, as somebody who writes for a living, it's sort of your nightmare that all of the words you generate have no effect. They have no influence in anybody. People just believe what they believe, and there's nothing you can say that will change it. And I like to be realistic. So if that's the truth, I would prefer to know that truth rather than to deny it to myself. I believe that is the truth in many, many circumstances. Perhaps 80% of the people who read an article or listen to a podcast that I put out are going not to be influenced by it at all. It's going to go in one ear and out the other. But that's because those people are not ready for the message. But the ones that matter, the ones you're really writing for, and of course you never know who they are, but there's a percentage of your audience, and it might be 20%, that is ready for change. So those people will indeed be influenced. And but the way that it so Schiller was talking about Schiller was talking in this article at the Atlantic website. He was saying, well, I guess the point I was making, the broader point was, Schiller's arguments are right. Okay, I believe they're right. Obviously, it's my opinion, but I believe very strongly that Schiller is right. And Schiller's beliefs are contrary to 90% of the investing advice you hear today. And they can't both be right. Schiller's model, which I call rational investing, it's not a term he uses, but Schiller is the godfather of the rational investing approach. Rational investing can't be right, and passive investing also be right. They're contrary models. And I believe that the biggest puzzle is not which one is right, because I really think if you look at the evidence is so clear. It's just overwhelming that rational investing is right and passive investing is wrong. But the puzzle is, and I think this is what makes it hard for people to come around, is why are there so many who believe in passive investing, especially experts, people who are well-informed, who have lots of experience? Why do they believe in passive investing? And they clearly do. And there clearly are millions of investors who believe. And I don't think most of the people who read my stuff can get over that. It's you know, it's like there was this woman, Janie, at the Vanguard Diehards board, and she once said to me, and she, you know, she, I loved her for saying it, because I so many people, so many people respond to my stuff in all kinds of ways. Some very positively, some with great skepticism. Some, you know, were just playing games. But Janie was just very forthright, and she said, "Rob, everything you say makes sense." And that was, of course, kind to say, but I think she was sincere. But she said, "I cannot go along with what you say, because what you are saying is not consistent with what the big name experts say. And Rob, I can't spend my life searching for the holy grail of investing. I just don't have the time. I have to go with the big name experts." And I admire her for saying it. It helped me to understand what's going on. And I think that's what's going on. I have studied, of course, Schiller's stuff, and not just Schiller, lots of people that are in that school. I have studied it in great depth, and so I am, you know, firmly convinced. But most people don't, you know. I've taken, 6.5 years studying it. A Janie and millions of others, they don't have 6.5 years. So they have to have shortcuts. And the most common shortcut is either to believe what the experts say, what the big name experts say, and that's what Janie's doing, or to believe what most of your friends say. That's another shortcut. And in the case of passive investing, both shortcuts point in the same direction. Most middle-class investors believe in some form of passive investing to some degree. Most experts endorse passive investing to some degree. So it's hard to get people to give up on that. But, and so what Schiller said in this Atlantic article hit right on that point. It made me very excited. He said, you know, he was talking about why we've had the market crash, you know, why people invest, you know, irrationally, and why they continue to do it. And he said, most people decide what to believe by talking things over with other people. And he said, there's nothing unreasonable about that. That's how we learn about all sorts of things. And he's absolutely right. When we're trying to decide on a restaurant, we ask our friends, what's a good restaurant? Sometimes people look at reviews, you know, where you could say you're looking at experts. More often, we just talk to friends. And you sort of know whether your friends' tastes are similar to your own. And you can, of course, listen to the reasons they give. You know, if your friend raves about the restaurant, but then when you say, well, why do you love it so much? And they say, well, you know, they have the best cheesecake in the world, and you don't like cheesecake. Well, you sort of discount that particular, you know, expression of enthusiasm. But if somebody says, oh, the thing I love is, you know, the service. They just, you know, they don't rush you. They're, you know, they get the job done, you know, they're not slow. And if the main thing that you care about in a restaurant is the service, well, then that really gets your interest piqued. You say, yeah, that's the place for me. So we learn. The point of all this is we learn by talking things over with other people. And that's, you know, I don't know if I could ever put forward an insight that is more more pedestrian and more profound at the same time. Because it's a totally bland statement to say we learn from talking things over with other people. You know, who could possibly dispute it? But I don't think that most people realize how great that influence is. If you took a poll and you asked people, how do people learn things, I will bet that most people would give other choices. They'd say, we learn from reading books. And most of us do not. Many people hardly ever read a new book after they finish school. So most of us don't learn from reading books. But people would cite that because they think that's the right answer. They'd say, we learn from reading books. Or people would say, we learn from taking classes. Or we learn from speeches. You know, or we learn from the news media, you know, whatever it happens to be. But what we really learn from is talking things over with, you know, it could be with family members, it could be with coworkers, it could be with neighbors. But of course, the point of this podcast is it could be your fellow community members on a discussion board. That's how we learn. And it's not at all a bad way to learn. I really wish we would spend more energies looking into this question of how people learn things and what the pros and cons of different methods are. Now, I've written a book on saving, and I'm in the process of writing one on investing, so I want people to learn from books as well. I'm certainly not advocating that people not read books, and I think books can be a wonderful way to learn as well, and I've learned a lot from books in my life. But talking things over with people has some wonderful advantages to it as a learning mechanism. And the advantages are, first of all, when you talk something over with someone, you can always direct where you want the information bits to be directed. In other words, you ask a question. So the person's not, when you read a book, the author doesn't necessarily start where you want him to start. The author tries to start at the beginning of the story and then progress logically to, you know, more sophisticated, more complex points. But you might understand the basics, and that introductory material is boring to you, so it loses your interest. Or if the author starts at a more advanced stage in the logic chain, you might not be able to follow it, and you become frustrated. You become lost. Whereas when you have a conversation with another person, if the person is over your head, you can say, wait a minute, slow down, go back a few steps. And if the person is, you know, being too basic, you say, yeah, but, you know, I know all that. Get to the other point. You know, you express your impatience, and the person can instantly change what words they are directing to you. And this is a tremendous advantage of conversation as a learning mechanism. You know, and there are many other advantages. Another advantage is we are not intimidated by conversations with other people. As a rule, some of us are somewhat intimidated. Obviously, if you have a friend who happens to be particularly intelligent, you might be a little intimidated. You might not want to look stupid around that person. But as a general rule, if people are our friends, and on discussion boards, if you participate regularly, the people who participate come to be your friends over time. We are not intimidated by our friends. They know us. We know them. A great thing is, on a discussion board, is everyone gets a chance to share. So, you know, say you come to a discussion board and you know nothing about real estate. Absolutely zero. In ordinary circumstances, you might feel sort of funny asking, you know, there's a real estate expert on the board, and this guy spends all his time investing in real estate, and he knows inside and out. You might feel sort of funny, you know, can you take time out of your day to take me by the hand and teach me the basics of real estate? But say that you're an expert on investing in bonds. And you've put up a number of posts on investing in bonds, and this guy has put up a post saying, hey, you've helped me so much with your stuff on bonds. Well, now you don't feel intimidated asking him about real estate because, you know, it's a fair exchange. You've helped him and he helps you. That's a tremendous benefit of learning about investing on discussion boards, that almost everybody has something that they're an expert in. You know, even if you don't know anything about an investing subject, you might be able to, maybe you can step into a discussion from time to time when tempers are heating up and you're a good peacemaker and people will come to appreciate that. Or maybe, you know, you're good at summarizing what other people say. So there's a discussion going on and then you'll stick in a post sort of summarizing the state of play on the discussion and people will come to respect you for that and you know, admire you for that. And so you feel free then to ask about things you don't understand. Well, this is a tremendous benefit. It's the highest price, there are all different ways to get information. Books is a very inexpensive way. Attending a speech is, as a general rule, more expensive. If you attend a conference, you'll have to pay admission, and it will cost you more for the information you obtain. Obtaining a tape set is going to be more expensive than a book, but less than a conference. The highest priced way of getting information is hiring a consultant, you know, paying by the hour, going to an investing professional. That's the most expensive route. The wonder of a discussion board is you can get all of the benefits of contacting a consultant without paying any fee at all. The fee you do pay is time. That's the fee you pay, in my view, on a discussion board. You pay time because you have to put time in to make it work. But you don't have to pay an hourly fee. And that's an amazing benefit because what it means is you don't have to worry about how much time you take exploring an issue. If you spend an hour and you still don't get it, you can spend another hour and another hour until you really get it. And I don't at all. There are some people who would say, oh, a discussion board is not equivalent to consulting a professional. Well, in some ways it's not, but in some ways it's better. It's quite true, of course, that the person you consult with on the discussion board, you know, doesn't have the educational background that a professional would have, doesn't have the experience. You know, they're not being held to professional standards. So in that sense, no, you're better off with the professional. But this ability to have your particular question answered and this ability not to be intimidated so that you can ask questions that are really on your mind, I think that trumps the benefits of professionalism in many cases. The reason is I can just tell you that people go into professionals all the time and fail to ask the most important questions. They do this with doctors, they do it with lawyers, they do it with investing professionals. People don't like to look dumb. And the most, of course, this is a theme of my work, the most important questions are the fundamentals, the ABCs. So people are particularly reluctant to ask experts to explain the ABCs. They don't want to look dumb. And on a discussion board, you can do that. And, you know, as long as you're among friends, you can ask anything. And of course, another great advantage of discussion boards is after the answer is given, there's a recorded record of the answer. You know, if say you're consulting with an investing professional in an office somewhere. The person's answering your questions. Maybe you're scribbling down notes. Maybe you're not. I usually scribble down notes whenever I consult with anyone. But some people don't. But even if you scribble down notes, you're not going to get the entire conversation, you know, transcribed. So what happens a day later when you want to refresh your memory of what was said? You don't have a record of it. But on a discussion board, you've got the whole thread in the post archives. And I can tell you, our minds play tricks on us. I often go back to old threads on discussion boards and review them to see what I can learn from them, you know, when it's a subject that I'm particularly interested in. And you'd be amazed. You will find new things in threads. If you review old threads, you will find new things all the time. You know, if you go back every 6 months, you'll always find something new. It's a totally counterintuitive phenomenon. You would think that you read it one time, you know, you've read it. It's not like that. Because what happens is your knowledge over that 6 month time period is growing. And so when you go back to a thread, there are things that were said that were important that at your earlier level of understanding just flew over your head. And now when you go back, you go, aha, now I get it. Now I see what that person was driving at. I didn't get it before. Of course, sometimes people express themselves imperfectly. And as your knowledge grows, as your knowledge of related issues grows, it all starts to click. So, you know, one benefit of discussion boards is that people will aim their teaching directly at you, directly at the questions you ask, and directly at the level of expertise that you have acquired, so that they are most helpful. You know, two, the intimidation factor is low. It's really just other people at the same level of, roughly the same level of understanding that you have. And so you don't have to feel intimidated that these people are big experts and you're taking up their time and, you know, you're running the clock, you're running up a big bill. You can just talk with them like friends. And third, you have a record. You have a transcript of the entire conversation that you can review at any time. And four, endless follow-up. If someone gives you an investing recommendation and you say, yeah, that sounds good, and you go out and you try it, and maybe it works to some extent, but not as much as you had hoped, you can go back and you can report your experience. You can say, look, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? Another big advantage is diversity. When you raise a question on a discussion board, you could go to the smartest professional in the world, somebody that charges, you know, $500 an hour. The person might be brilliant, but that person only knows what that person knows. There is no person on planet Earth that knows it all. I don't care if their name is John Bogle or Warren Buffett or Robert Shiller. They don't know it all. They don't know it all. I don't know what it would cost to hire any of those three, you know, on an hourly basis. It would cost a lot of money, I would imagine. I think I could learn more on a discussion board. Now, if I was asking about their investing philosophy, that might not be so. But if I really want to understand, and what most of us need is information on how to implement strategies. We don't really need to have the strategies explained to us. There are books available where we can get that, but where we are weak is in particulars of how to implement. I'd rather have someone who will sit with me and go through step by step, and somebody who I can go back to for follow-up. So these are tremendous advantages. So the point here is we learn how to invest, not really by reading books. Reading books plays a part, for sure. But the biggest thing that influences us is conversations. And discussion boards allow for a new type of conversation, a type of conversation that simply was not available to us before. Diversity, that was the point I was starting to make. Diversity, that means you can talk to people at different income levels. You know, one question that comes up with saving, comes up all the time, is how much money you make. And a lot of times, I've gone to, you know, people who participate in saving discussions, they tend to be people who have saved a lot. They're often people with larger than average incomes. And sometimes people with lower than average incomes are either intimidated to participate or sometimes even turned off. Sometimes people will make statements that are... I did this the other day. I didn't do it intentionally, but someone, there was a blog that linked to an article I had. I have an article at the website on the upsizing. I believe it's at the upsizing section of the site, which are basically saving strategy articles. And I had something there called 10 unconventional, you know, money saving tips, an article, something like that. And somebody linked to it at a blog. And but one of the tips was, I think I said the first $100,000 is the hardest. And I think I actually picked that tip up from a thread at the Early Retirement Forum. That's my recollection. But somebody had made that comment that the first $100,000 is the hardest. And I won't go into why this is so, but it does have implications, because the point is it can take a long time to get to 100,000, but the second 100,000 can come a lot quicker for various reasons. And so you're sort of letting people know up front that don't be discouraged if it seems like progress is slow, because it's going to speed up a lot after you pass, you know, from the first 100,000 into the second. Well, a lot of people, there, this was at a blog, and a lot of people commented positively on other tips, but then they'd say that, you know, that $100,000 tip, I can't imagine having $100,000. I'm trying to get to my first 10,000. You know, who does this guy, you know, think he is? Now, you know, I obviously didn't mean any harm, and I didn't mean to intimidate people or make people feel bad or anything. But of course, if you're going to retire early, you have to save more than $100,000. So when you know, I come from a retire early community, so obviously people had to be saving in the hundreds of thousands, or they weren't eligible for early retirement. So in some communities, saying the first $100,000 is the hardest is not an offensive or shocking statement. In other communities, it sort of is, because people aren't used to dealing with such big numbers. So, you know, that's a problem. But the great thing about discussion boards is you can have this diversity. You know, if you're worried about that, you can seek out a board that has only people with smaller incomes, or you can seek out a board that has only people with larger incomes. Or you can be in a, if you're in a large community, you can seek out people in that community that have incomes similar to your own. Well, you couldn't find, you could search the world for an investing expert that has a small income. I don't know if you'd be able to find one. So you could never get advice from someone who is living through what you're living through what it means to save with a modest income. But on a discussion board, you could find that easily. There are hundreds of blogs today on how people with modest incomes go about saving. Now that is powerful stuff. Powerful, powerful stuff. And it is only available to us since the introduction of the internet. I know, I will tell you, John Graney was the person who founded the Retire Early homepage discussion board at Motley Fool. I am the person who was primarily responsible for building the board into the most popular at Motley Fool. There were many, many, many wonderful contributors. You know, I was trying to build up such a board at the time, and so I put a lot of effort into it, and I think those efforts paid off. There was a reason why I did that, and this was back in 1999. And in 1999, we didn't have all these blogs on saving. There are thousands of them today. You know, you can't possibly keep track of them all. But back in 1999, there wasn't that much of that sort of thing available. And I was, you know, I had searched all through the 90s for material on how to save effectively and how to invest effectively. And so I wanted to build up a community on the internet where we would have the best savers in the world. This was my goal. It was to have the best savers in the world. Not people who had theories on saving, people who had done it and who were effective at it. And then, you know, tap into their brain power, mine their insults. Their insights. And we did that. And we had an incredible community. For a while, I guess, from, say, December of 99 through January of 2001, we had the best discussion board community on the internet, in my opinion. It was just amazing. Every issue under the sun came up at that board. And we had just hundreds or even thousands of kind, generous, smart, you know, fun-loving people. It was just amazing. It was amazing. Now, as I say, it's not that unique today. If you went back and looked at that board now, you might say, I don't see anything here that I haven't seen in blogs. But at that day, it wasn't available anywhere else. And you know, blogs are a tremendous resource today. And You know, the sad thing about the internet is there's all sorts of wonderful stuff being generated, but it's such a sea of information that it's hard to sort out the wheat from the chaff. That's the problem. But my point here is that you can get this diversity. You can tap. That was the power of that board, was that we were all the people at the board were interested in retiring early. And we never had been able to find other people who had that interest before. You know, we'd go to jobs and none of the other people at our job was going to retire early, or in our neighborhoods, none of the other people that lived near us were planning early retirement. So when we got to that board, we all had something in common. We all knew where we were coming from, and people could help. People could understand our problems in a way that outsiders, so to speak, never could. And so there's tremendous potential with this communications medium for helping people. I mean, obviously the potential is there for helping people with all sorts of issues. But particularly, I think this is so in the financial area. Because in the financial area, we're all somewhat intimidated. We're all afraid of money. Not all, but most. Most of us are afraid of money issues. But we all want to do better. I mean, just about any middle-class person you talk to wants to do better. And reading books has its place, but it can only go so far. But being able to talk things over with friends is a powerful, powerful tool. You know, something that really troubles me in the investing area is that I, of course, have this problem with the passive investing model, which is a model that ignores valuations, and I recommend the rational model, which takes valuations into account. One of the problems that people don't see when people talk about how popular passive investing is, which is why I think they buy into it. Many don't talk about it. They just, without even being conscious, they subscribe to the theory only because other people subscribe to it. They see other people believe it, and they say, well, I'll believe it. They don't even know why they're doing it. They just do it instinctively. It's just a natural thing to do. But what people miss is that passive investing, passive/emotional investing, is not always popular. It's always popular when prices are out of control. Emotional approaches always become popular when they're the most damaging. And now that we've had a price crash, my guess is the popularity of passive investing is going to begin to fade. I already see some signs of that. I hope to see more in coming days, but I think we're beginning to see that process. The popularity of passive investing is beginning to fade. Now, what we need to do, if we want to become more effective investors, is we need to be able to stop passive/emotional investing from becoming popular. It will become popular again unless we put some kind of brake on it. I think the internet offers the potential for a brake. And the reason that is so is that passive/emotional thinking on investing is circular. You know, the way it works is that we all have a get-rich-quick impulse. The get-rich-quick impulse, that's just human nature. You know, it's like saying we all have an impulse to eat, you know, chocolate brownies instead of spinach. You know, it's just the way we were made. We all have a get-rich-quick impulse. When prices start to go high, our common sense tells us we need to pull back from stocks. We all also have common sense. So we have a conflict. We all have an inner conflict on investing. And what we want to do is strengthen the common sense side of our personalities. And we want to do whatever we can to weaken the get-rich-quick impulse, because the get-rich-quick impulse is what causes us to lose money. The common sense impulse is what helps us. So we need to strengthen the strong, healthy impulse and weaken the damaging one. But what happens is as prices go up, sometimes that happens. Sometimes prices start to go up, and then people become critical of the excess prices, and prices go down again. and the market maintains a healthy, you know, a healthy balance. Prices don't get out of hand. But every now and then, and I don't know, it happens, you know, every 20 years or so, things get out of check. And prices go too high. And then once prices go too high and people don't object, which every now and then happens, it happened in the 1990s. Once that happens, then it's off to the races with all the bad emotional junk. Because once we don't speak up, there are all sorts of negative emotions that come into play. We're ashamed that we didn't speak up. We're emotionally invested in this overpriced asset class. Experts start to concoct theories to justify excessive investing in stocks, and that gives us a rationalization for our bad behavior, and then we start spending the phony money. You know, when you get to the top of a bull market, you have all this money coming in, which is all cotton candy. It's all going to get blown away in the wind in the long term. But we're pretending that it's real, and we start spending it. We buy bigger houses. You know, we start going on bigger vacations, all kinds of things. Bigger car, we buy more cars. And so then now we really don't want to hear the realities of investing. You know, now we've got a mental block 10 feet thick. Don't tell me, you know, in January of 2000, stock prices were three times fair value. Well, when stock prices are a little above fair value, somebody can tell you, hey, that money's not real. That's just play. But when it's three times fair value, our future's depending on it. And then, you know, we become intolerant of realistic investing strategies. Now, what a discussion board does is it creates a community. And while one person can always get it wrong, two can always get it wrong, three can always get it wrong, in a bull market, you have millions getting it wrong. But there's never a case when everybody gets it wrong. Never. Because we all come from different life experiences. And there always are going to be some people who have unusual circumstances that cause them to hold on to their common sense or to hold on to their rational investing thoughts. And they're not going to go along with the crazy bull market. No way, no how. In a discussion board community that is run properly, you know, that has effective, site administration policies that are enforced. They have to be enforced or it doesn't. All the boards I've been at had effective policies. They just weren't enforced, so it doesn't do any good. If there are effective policies being enforced, what happens is those people, those outliers, you know, the 10% or the 20% who refuse to go along with the crazy, emotional, passive investing junk, those people, they are the hope for the future, because what happens is they will continue to give the rational argument. Now, it may be that there will be times when not many will listen to them, but at least everyone has access to reality. We don't lose touch with reality in a healthy community. And as things, you know, there are things that can happen. It could be a price drop. A mild price drop. It doesn't have to be a crash. And people will start to have doubts about the reigning orthodoxy, the passive model of the day. And people will start to ask questions. And if you have this group of 10% or 20%, whatever it is, that doesn't go along with the craziness, that group becomes your lifeline. That group becomes your connection with the reality principle. And then, of course, you know, that spreads. That group convinces, you know, there's a little price drop and the 20% becomes 30%. They persuade 10% more and now you've got a 30% group. And then you have another price drop and it becomes 40. And that, you know, you don't need to have millions of people who understand the flaws of passive investing to eventually undermine passive investing. It does take time. But if you have a small group can become a big group. And that's one of the wonders of community. We learn how to invest as a community. And One of the things that I argue against all the time is people thinking that all you have to do is go into a room and learn how to invest effectively and come out of that room and do it. We are not lone wolves. Human beings are not lone wolves. Was it Aristotle said man is a political animal? We operate in communities. And when everyone in the community is saying you're wrong, you're going to have a hard time sticking to your rational investing strategy. You need to have positive feedback from other rational investors if your plan is going to work. There was a great article in Money Magazine some years back about the Vanguard Diehards community. And they were, of course, talking about, they were talking about passive investors for the most part. But there's a lot of rational investing in Bogle's ideas as well. So that's not fair. The community was a mix. There were some dogmatic passive investors in that community, no question. But there were also a lot of great ideas, smart people, smart, generous people, including Bogle himself, to be sure. But this article, there was an article in Money Magazine about that discussion board, and it was wonderful because it talked about how people would come back there, and some would say passive investing is a simple strategy. Why can't you just read about it and do it? Why do you have to have a discussion board? But the answer was, and it was clear from reading that article, the answer was people needed regular confirmation of what they were doing. People needed regular confirmation of what they were doing. They needed to have other people tell them they were doing the right thing for the strategy to work. You can't, an advisor can tell you the most brilliant strategy in the world, but it's not going to get you any money unless you stick to it. And once the advisor's gone, your stick-to-itiveness is gone. But if you've got a community of people that become your friends and that you interact with on a daily or weekly basis, whatever it is, then you really will stick with it, or at least your odds go up considerably. You get the line from your friends about how you're supposed to respond to a particular, scenario that turns up. Now, the downside, with the Vanguard Diehards group is that it became dogmatic. It became sort of a cult of personality, and not necessarily Bogle's personality. It was a cult of personality of the so-called leaders of that board community. So it became sort of sick. And there were always wonderful people there. Most of the community members were wonderful, but there was a sick side to it. So you have to watch that. But that's a potential downside of the Internet Discussion Board. I don't see that it's required. It's just a question of how the board is operated. And I have hopes. I'm an optimistic person, I think, by nature. I have hopes that the Vanguard Diehards board will rise again. I have hopes that the Bogleheads.org board will open their board up to more diverse viewpoints. That board has the potential to change the history of investing. The Bogleheads.org board is a board of tremendous power. They don't see it. I don't think the owners and the leaders of that board, they're quite proud of their board, and properly so. But they don't see the potential, in my view. I think the potential is 10 times what they think it is. And they think it's big, but I think it's bigger. That's probably the subject for another podcast. But the point here is, you don't want to just... investing is not an intellectual act. You don't learn things and then do them. You learn things, you try to do them, and then you need a feedback mechanism where you get assurance from other people doing similar things so that you stay on the right track and so that you don't get shaken up when things don't go just the way you expect it. And for that, you need a community. You need an internet discussion board community. I had hoped that our community at Motley Fool was going to be this community for savers, for the best savers and investors in the world for many, many years to come. That was my vision. And abusive posting ruined it. Motley Fool didn't understand what they had. It makes me sad. It makes me want to cry. But Motley Fool didn't see what they had. And I've tried to build that community in numerous other places. At the nofeeboards.com, I tried to build it at Early Retirement Forum. I tried to build it at Financial Wedring Forum. I tried to build it at Vanguard Diehards. I would love to try to do it at Bogleheads. You know, we need a community that is less dogmatic. And just because we were at a time, because these boards were formed at a time when stock prices were truly insane, the level of emotionalism just became too great. And those boards were either destroyed or they put bans on honest posting in effect. But I have hopes. You know, I have hopes that will turn around. And if it doesn't turn around, I have hopes that we will create new boards where that vision will be evidenced. But the point here is we need feedback from these other people. We need feedback from fellow humans in order to really understand. You don't know a strategy. You don't really, you know, there's understanding something and then there's understanding it at a deep level. Reading it in a book, you might be able to recite it back if you take a test. But that's not understanding it. To really work a strategy and long-term investing, you see, long-term investing is all about confidence. You got to get through the rough patches. You can't get through the rough patches without confidence. What a lot of passive investors have is bravado, which is not the same thing as confidence. Confidence is a when you're confident, different viewpoints don't worry you, you know. But confidence comes from deep knowledge, and deep knowledge cannot be attained by reading a book, no matter how careful a reader you are. Deep confidence comes from working something day by day by day for years. It really takes years. But on a discussion board community where you can get feedback each time a new question occurs to your mind, you can develop the kind of confidence you need to be an effective long-term investor. I believe what I'm saying here is important. I believe this is the secret to successful investing. You see, people all the time, they come to me and they want me to give them a tip. You know, what stock should I be in? Or, you know, what should my allocation be? Or, you know, what PE10 level should I change my allocation? They want everything reduced to just some simple little message. But what really works is deep knowledge, which leads to confidence. And I think a tool to getting there is participating, or at least reading, but better participating on an internet discussion board. And it has to be a board that is open to a diversity of viewpoints. You know, you can learn things from boards that are not open. The Bogleheads board is a wonderful learning resource. It troubles me greatly that it's not open to a diversity of viewpoints, but it is a wonderful learning resource all the same. But of course, I worry about the people that don't know what to tune out. They don't know what's real and what's not. But, you know, it certainly shows the potential. But you need that daily or weekly or monthly, whatever it is, affirmation that you're on the right track. Humans need that. One of the questions that comes up a lot in the investing field is people say, should I pay to go to an advisor? And there are some people who hate the idea. They say, oh, never pay to go to an advisor. You know, they're going to try to trick you. That's a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. I don't have that harsh viewpoint. I think a lot of advisors genuinely try to help people. And I think sometimes people just need that. They need another human sitting there that they can ask questions to steer them the right way. But what worries me about going to an advisor is not so much the money you pay, although that can be a problem. It is an expensive way to learn, for sure. You can learn more, you know, by working things through on your own. But the bigger problem is, if you don't work things through on your own, you will not gain confidence in what you're doing. What some people try to do is they want to give up the thinking project to the expert. You tell me what to do, Mr. Expert, Mr. Guru. And that's the worst thing you can do. If you don't understand the logic chain, if you don't understand why you're doing it, you won't be able to stick to it. And if you don't stick to it, it won't work. And so what happens is people go to experts. Experts tell them to do ABC. They do ABC. Some unexpected event comes along. They abandon the plan. And then if anybody says, well, why did the expert's advice fail? The expert says, look, they didn't follow it. Well, they didn't follow it because they didn't have regular feedback. But on a discussion board, you can have that. You know, if you can afford to hire an expert to stay with you every day, I guess you could have that through an expert. It would be mighty expensive, you know, if you're not a multimillionaire. but on a discussion board, you can have that. You obviously, and there's all kinds of ways that you can learn what information is good. The big fear people have on discussion boards is they say, well, some of these people are uninformed. Some of them are even deceptive, and that's true. Some people are uninformed, some people are deceptive. But if you're smart, you can see through most of it. You learn that certain people always give sensible advice, always give balanced advice, and others, you know, are iffy, and others are always bad. So you learn, you learn what screen names to rely on, and you have to tune out the bad. You certainly have to have a filter. If you're going to use a discussion board to learn about investing, you have to have a filter. But if you have that filter, it can work wonders. Something that I've done on discussion boards and that I think is going to become a common thing is I've interacted with a lot of experts. I never intended this to happen, but it's just sort of happened to me. But, I've had extensive email communication with Scott Burns, Dallas Morning News financial columnist. I've had extensive email communication with Michael Kitsis, financial planner in Maryland. I've now had email communication with Bill Bangen, financial planner out in California, the authors of one of the early old school safe withdrawal rate studies. I had Ed Easterling. He's the author of a book on investing and has a great website. And, he came to our discussion board at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group. And John Russell and I, sort of interviewed him for an hour or two. I interacted with Larry Swedrow, author of a number of books over at Vanguard Diehards. I interacted with Rick Ferry. I interacted with Bill Bernstein, author of Four Pillars of Investing. I never had any personal interaction with John Bogle, but I sent him an email letting him know about valuation-informed indexing and letting him know about the stock return predictor. And I know that it's impossible for me to believe that Bogle doesn't know about me because he said that he would check out that board once a week. And the valuation-informed indexing concept was the dominant item of discussion at that board for 2 years. So it's impossible for me to believe that Bogle doesn't know. And there were people who directed some of my questions to Bogle. And, so I think Bogle knows about the ideas. I hope he gets to know more about them. I'd like to have more interactions with him. Bogle, I've had sort of limited. Jonathan Clements, the columnist at the Wall Street Journal, not today, but he was for a long time. Jonathan Clements, I had some email interactions with. Obviously, the people who have done, I've interacted a lot with John Graney. He's the author of an old school safe withdrawal rate study. John and I, we had a lot of good experiences for several years. We've had some bad ones in recent years. Bill Scholler, publisher of the FireCalc calculator, an old school calculator. I had lots of interactions with Bill. John Walter Russell has his own website today. The leading safe withdrawal rate researcher in the world. I have almost daily communication with John, developed calculators with John. I've had interaction with a lot of experts. You can do that too. A lot of these people are now available on the internet. Now, you don't want to waste their time. You sort of want to choose your spots. But that's a great opportunity. And I think there's going to be more of that because it's a great way to test. If you're thinking of hiring somebody, it's a great way to test, whether you would get along with them, what sort of help can they provide. Ask them some questions on a discussion board. See how you relate. It's a great way to learn. Ask people about their articles. Scott Burns has a website. Well, if he has an article, in the newspaper and you don't understand it or you don't understand a point, go to the discussion board and ask and get an answer. And that article becomes 10 times more valuable than it would have been if you didn't have that opportunity. So in many ways, the internet, another great thing about the internet, of course, is it keeps a record of things that have gone on. I have so many times, when I'm trying to make the case for rational investing, I have to point out fallacies, inconsistencies in the arguments for passive investing. Well, there are scores of them. It's amazing. I had no idea when I started down this path how weak the case is for passive investing, how many contradictions there are in the thinking of these big name experts. And I discover them, and now I can, on the internet, you can prove your case because you know, if I said, you know, expert A has you know, one point said this and another point said this other thing, somebody might doubt whether I'm telling the truth. I can link to their statements, especially if they've appeared on discussion boards, but also if they just do articles or, you know, some people give the text to their speeches. Well, that's a learning tool. That changes the history of investing. Because in the old days, we had to take the experts at their word. Today, we don't have to do that. We can, you know, we can check out what they've said. We can look for the weaknesses. We can help teach the experts. This is something I push all the time. It shouldn't be a one-way street where we learn from the experts. You know, we're the little dutiful students, and they're the masters. We can teach them, and you know, what could be better for them than to have their, you know, their students teaching them? It's all, that's community. That's the benefit of community. This is what I believe in. You know, we can even organize community action. You know, this, which is what I hope to do with the passive investing model. I hope to be able to get enough people interested to get leading experts to acknowledge the errors of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies so that we can get good retirement information out to people. You know, get the press involved. Get articles written up on this. I would like to get John Bogle. My ultimate goal is to get John Bogle to publicly do a speech with perhaps 20 other experts around him acknowledging that, you know, that passive investing is either a flawed model, which is what I believe, a failed model, I would say, or at the very least that he has developed doubts about it, that he's not sure, that it should not be put forward so dogmatically, it should not be claimed that it's science, that there are serious, serious questions about the legitimacy of this model. You know, that changes the history of investing right there. And that can be done through the internet because we form communities, we organize community action. And it's, you know, it's all to the good. I can't see any bad that can come from it. Either we persuade, you know, someone like Bogle to do that. He won't do it unless it's the right thing to do, obviously. So that would be a wonderful good. Or, you know, he makes the case why it shouldn't be done, which is also good. If there's a strong case why it shouldn't be done, how could that not be a learning experience for us all? So I see the potential of this new communications medium as being virtually unlimited. The internet, of course, has power in all fields, but I think it has particular power in the personal finance area because personal finance questions have been taboo for many, many years. You know, people would always say you shouldn't talk about politics and religion, and some would say politics, religion, and money. It's the great taboo. We don't like people to know how much we earn. We don't like people to know how much we save. We don't like people to know how our investments have done. But in order to succeed, we need to understand personal finance on a deeper level. And in order to understand on a deeper level, we need to discuss more with our fellow humans. And the internet discussion board allows us to do that in ways that we couldn't dream of doing it at an earlier time. So I truly believe the internet changes everything. The internet is going to change the future of investing in days to come. I hope it happens sooner rather than later. You know, I see these things and I want to see them come to pass. So I hope it happens sooner than later. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.